Lecture 3, Jefferson, the Revolutionary American.
In our last lecture, we looked at the mind of Thomas Jefferson, and we saw the emergence in his thinking of distinctly rational, scientific, and radical lines of thought. This lecture, we're going to look at how Jefferson applied that intellect to the problem of creating a rhetoric that would help define revolutionary America and early American nationality. For it is, in fact, his political rhetoric that brought him his national fame, that made him, as I will argue, the spokesman for American nationality. And we're going to look at, in particular, three different areas. First, his early political experiences in Virginia as he emerges as a member of Virginia political society. Then we're going to look at his first great writing, A Summary View of the Rights of British America, the writing which propelled him into national fame. And then, of course, the Declaration of Independence, the document which made him not only famous, but a leader and legendary to this day. But first we have to begin in Virginia. For in the years before he became a national figure of great prominence, Jefferson established his public identity as a Virginian, as a player in Virginia society and Virginia politics. It's there we first see him deploy the remarkable rhetoric, the gift for language that would subsequently make him the legend he is. Well, his political career in Virginia really begins with his practice of law. In 1767, he completed his legal studies and was admitted to the bar. Now, I want to state something right away. There's a misconception that Jefferson was a traditional county court lawyer. He wasn't. Jefferson never practiced in the county courts, where pettifoggers engaged in all sorts of small claims. Rather, he only practices in the highest court of appeals in the province, the general court. The general court met twice a year for 24-day sessions, and it deals with almost all higher law, and particularly with property claims and land claims that are over a fairly small sum. And in fact, over half of Jefferson's cases deal with land titles. Most of them are, in fact, caveats. Now, what is a caveat? When you speculated in lands in the frontier of Virginia, you wanted to avoid as much as possible paying taxes, fees, and improving the acreage. You held it for speculative purposes to turn it over. This is called land jobbing. And Jefferson himself was a land jobber, as was his father. As a result, the government of Virginia, which lacked the resources to enforce the payment of taxes and various fees, had an interesting provision. They would put it up to other people to enter claims against those who had failed to pay fees, and if they would pay some small fraction of those fees, they would then get title to the land, and that's called a caveat. Now, most savvy Virginians engage in something called friendly caveats. You speculated on a large piece of land in the West, you paid your surveying fees, you paid your initial court costs, and then to avoid paying taxes, you had a friend or relative enter a caveat against your own holding. Then they would get legal title, having to pay very few fees themselves, and hand it over to you. And initially, most of Jefferson's cases are friendly caveats. But at some point, he gets involved in a very interesting project, which actually doesn't wind up panning out, not his fault, which is he starts planning with a group of frontier lesser gentry to take over the large speculations of the Virginia blue blood elites. That is to say, to enter hostile caveats. He starts doing research, looking at all of the land claims over the previous decades. And secretly, he's going to issue caveats against all of them on behalf of his group. And this is significant because what Jefferson is doing is he's siding with the people like his father, the small gentry of the frontier, against the great aristocracy, the first families of Virginia's. It's the Jeffersons against the Randolphs. And he does inform some of his friends who have speculated in lands to keep their eyes out and make sure they've processed all their fees. It's a flawless plan. The only problem is when the elite discovers what Jefferson is about, change the laws to obviate Jefferson's scheme. So in the spring of 1770, they passed laws making it the duty of the challenger or caveater to pay all court and legal costs for all parties.